Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anne, and I am an alcoholic and an addict. I've been sitting here listening to everyone else's amazing chairs, and when I first got up, like, I was outside trying to get a coffee, my stomach's growling, and I get a phone call, Anne, everyone's at the table, you need to come in, and I'm like, bollocks. You know, I'm like supposed to be like really like, I don't know, I've not got to talk to you about PI, I've got to know what the fuck I'm talking about. Shit. So I come in and I'm like, I can do this, and my stomach's getting louder and I'm convinced you can all hear it, and I'm starting to fidget and I'm thinking, oh no, so I'm trying to catch my friend's eye, give me a coffee and something to eat, please. You know, and this fear's building up in me. And I'm getting nervous, and I'm getting anxious, and, you know, and I'm listening to everyone else speaking, and they're like, brilliant, and I'm like, yeah, great, but at the same token, this selfish part of me is going, bollocks, you know, the fuck do I have to tell you guys, do you know what I mean? But apparently, I know a little bit about PI, and I'll tell you how I know about PI. I'm going to go into a little bit about me first of all. So, as I said, my name is Anne, and I'm still an alcoholic and an addict. That did not change just because I've attended a few meetings. You know, I don't come into these rooms because I honestly thought that I was going to come in, do like a 12-week course, get a certificate, and off I'd bob. Do you know what I mean? When I heard that you had to stay here for life, I'm like, oh, man, really? Why? You know? But I realise now that the reason why we stay here for life is because at the end of the day, if you got your certificate after your 12-week course and you bobbed off, there wouldn't be anyone else here when Al came through the door. If I got my certificate and off I bobbed, then now I wouldn't be here for the next new woman who's got to come through the door. That's why we stay. And not only that, because really and truly, we're all quite sick in the head. And if we go off and start thinking that we can do it all by ourselves, we're all going to end up in shit again, aren't we? It's all going to go horribly wrong very, very quickly. But the reality is at the end of the day, I came in, when I came in, I was broken. When I came in, I tried to tell myself that I wasn't an addict, I wasn't an alcoholic, I wasn't anything, do you know what I mean? I was just like, you know, I just used a little bit too much, you know. I tried to tell myself that I was a casual user, but as been explained, I weren't the casual user. I really wasn't. You know, the whole, like, you know, once upon a time, I could actually have leftovers. I could. That was a real thing that happened once many years ago, but my brain will hold on to that memory of it and tell me that I can control it. You know what I mean? And again, the whole obsessing about it, like, you know, holding on till Friday, you know, and I never did towards the end. Like, you know, I would tell you, if you asked me how often do I drink, I'd say only on the weekend. You know what I mean? And I wouldn't mention any use of drugs or anything, because, like, you know, I don't want you to know that I do that, because it's all secret. But I certainly wasn't the casual user. I would convince myself that I was the heavy user. I really, actually, really identify with that. I was the heavy user. But can I stop for any sufficient reason? And in my head, I would tell you, yes, I could. I could, but I couldn't stop. I could not stop when I, at the age of 32, had a stroke. I had a fucking stroke and I was in hospital. And for a couple of weeks, and I remember the doctor coming round, and there was me and this other lady who was across the way from me. And she was obviously like, I was the youngest person in the whole of the unit. I was the youngest fucking person who had had a stroke. And I remember when the doctor come round and they were talking about the leaflets and the do's and don'ts of what you can and cannot do for when you've, like, you know, now you've had a stroke and you're part of this, like, club, you know. To reduce your risk, because you've had one, you're 50% more likely to have another one. So to reduce your risk even further, you need to, like, follow a few simple rules. Well, I'm the sort of person, I don't know about anyone else who can identify with this, but rules in general, no, you're all right, don't like them. I'll give it a good go just for, like, you know, the face of it. But in reality, I'm bending them motherfuckers the first opportunity I get, you know? And I remember they were talking about, like, you know, eating healthy and not smoking and this, that and the other. And I remember there were two things that both me and this lady reacted to. And here's the difference. We're both in a stroke unit. We're both here having strokes. And he turns around and says, you've got to give up fat. So, like, full fat milk, butter, cream, that sort of thing, yeah? And you've got to, like, you know, you're only allowed one unit of alcohol a day. Now, I'm going to let you have a guess at who was the one who got most upset about the fucking alcohol. You know what I mean? This lady was like, oh my God, I can't eat cream. I'm like, fuck your cream. Hello? We can't drink. I was like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, can't I save up my units for the weekend? And it's like, you know, like men's, and this I have always found very unfair, by the way, ladies. I don't know about you, but we're only allowed 7 units a week and they can have 14. How fucking rude is that? So my argument was, well, I'm 5'10". And I'm bigger than a lot of geezers that I fucking know. So surely I'm allowed the 14. Mate, no, it doesn't work that way. Okay. But I'd give it a good go. And even then, 14, really? That's a fucking quiet night in. Do you know what I mean? So I'm sitting there on this stroke unit, sitting there going to my doctor, my consultant, can I not save them up? Can I not save my units up so that I can have a nice blowout every once in a while? And he's like, no, Anne, no. And I still didn't think I had a problem. I really didn't. And the reality is I'd like to say yes, and what I did is every 6 months I had a mad little blowout and it was lovely. No. Because I was clean and sober. Fear sobered me for a bit. When I say a bit, I was like a few weeks and I was doing the berries and the seeds and the water and I was walnuts because they're good for your brain and everything was wonderful. And I was boring and I hated it and I was miserable. And I had a drink, but I only managed, I don't know how, because this is the cunning, baffling thing about our illness, because it let me have one. It let me have two, because I ain't never going to have fucking one, really, let's be honest. But, you know, and I had two. And then before I knew it, I was back and I was rolling. I mean, I got told that I couldn't take aspirin because of the medication I was on and this, that and the other, and aspirin could cause a stroke. So I would be dying with a hangover, by the way, you know, excuse me, being up all night and drinking and sniffing and so on and so forth. And I said, oh, I've got headache. And you say, oh, here, I have aspirin. Oh, no, I can't take that. It could kill me. A gram of Coke and a litre of vodka on the other hand, no, we're good. So I couldn't stop for my own health. I couldn't stop when my mum wanted me to stop. I couldn't stop when my children wanted me to stop. So am I a heavy drinker and a heavy user? No. No, I'm not. So I have to face the fact that, yes, I am the real deal. Even though occasionally, even now to this day, 3.5 years later, my brain is still trying to tell me to go, really, Anne? And I have to go back and I have to take myself back to my step one and see my truth, my reality of where it takes me and the dark, dark, dark abyss that I feel with inside of me, that horrible, horrible feeling. My last use up wasn't anything amazing. It wasn't anything exciting. It wasn't the most I'd done. It wasn't the most I'd used. It wasn't the most I'd spent. It wasn't the longest I'd been out for. It wasn't anything. It was me, a ticket, and a bottle of vodka. The TV practically on mute. Me listening for people who were never going to show up, you know, and talking to the people that were only there through my imagination. You know, yeah, great lifestyle. I was living the dream, baby, living the dream. And the come down started, and my come downs, I would always try and outrun. I'd go for a walk, I'd call people, I'd have my phone in my hand. You know, like, I can't phone you at 5, so I'm going to text you. Please, as soon as you wake up, call me and come and rescue me. Do you know what I mean? Whether I'm calling you to come round and take my kids or look after me or, you know, do something or just stroke my hair and tell me that I'm going to be okay. You know, I'm phoning people to come and rescue me, and I would alternate who these people were. And, yeah, my mum was one of them. You know, sometimes I would phone my mum, that poor woman, you know what I mean? She's seen her 32-year-old daughter having a stroke, and as well as all the other, like, you know, mum, this has happened, mum, that's happened, you know what I mean? She's had to put up with a lot as well, like, you know, worrying about her own grandchildren as well, and, you know. And so this come down started, and I thought, what am I going to do? And this voice in my head, now here's the thing, I believe it was the voice of God, and it wasn't, this is God speaking. It was me, it was my voice. I could hear my own voice in my head, but I believe that that was God right there and then. Because this voice in my head turned around and said, go get that number. And by that number, it meant the number of the poster that was hung up in my doctor's surgery that I'd spent hours staring at, paranoid to fuck that if I stared for too long, everyone else in the doctor's surgery was going to follow my eyes. Because, of course, that's all you want to do is watch what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're all going to be sitting there going, oh, I wonder what she's looking at, you know. And get this number from this poster that had been put up in my doctor's surgery because I tried to memorise it. I smoked weed for a good fucking 20 years. There's no memory going on there, do you know what I mean? So I sat there and I decided, and the first thing is this was the first time in my life that I went, you know what, that's a good fucking idea. Now, normally I'd think about that number that I'd seen in my doctor's surgery and tried to memorize the number too many times and couldn't stare at for too long because of paranoid that you would know that I'm looking at it. And I would think about that number in those hours of come down and desperation. And the difference between this time and those times before was I would always put it off till Monday. I'll do it Monday. I'll go Monday. Because Monday's the day, innit, people? Monday's the day. You're going to start a diet. We're going to do it Monday. We're going to sign up to the gym. We're going to start looking for a new job. We're going to do it all Monday. But the problem with Monday and people like me is by the time Monday comes, I'm fine. I'm all right. I got this shit. I'm all right. Because Monday's the day I'm going to do it. So, of course, Monday comes and goes. And I don't really need that number. It wasn't as bad as I'm making it out to be. Obviously, it was just on the come down. I'm not going to do it again, because every time I used, I swore off. Every fucking time I used, I swore off. Every hungover, I swore I was going to do better, you know. And this time I got up and I went and I got that number. And the most amazing thing happened, because I walked down, put my sunglasses on, because of course no one will know who I am, because of course I'm paranoid that you all know where I'm going and what it is that I'm doing and what number I'm going to call. And I walked down and I phoned, put the number into my phone, and I called it. And the most amazing thing happened is somebody answered that phone. It weren't ringing for too long. There was a person on the end of that line. And the most beautiful thing about that was that person spoke my language. I don't know how I knew, but I knew that they knew. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Or I didn't then, I do now. I stood there and I was sort of like walking down the road back towards my house, and something was happening already. Something most amazing, beautiful thing was happening already, because I was like... And I remember I was just like, I could speak to this person. And I remember crying down the phone and I'm going, I don't know why I do this. And you know, he didn't tell me I was an addict. He didn't say it's because of this or anything like that. He just spoke to me. And I don't really remember a huge deal of the conversation, but I remember certain points. And I remember when I was saying, and as I was talking to him, he goes like, you know, Anne, tell me what area you're in and what I can do. If it's okay, I'll pass your number onto a woman in your area and she'll come and meet you. And I'm like, yes, yes, absolutely, yes, please, God, yes. You know, I couldn't tell him I live in Norfolk fast enough. I was like, please. I'm like hoping that someone's going to come and swoop down and fucking rescue me right there and right there. Yes, anything. And then he turns around and goes, and what I'll also do is find out where your nearest meetings are. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not that bad. I'm not an addict or anything. I don't fucking need meetings. Like, calm down. Do you know what I mean? I just want to stop and calm. You know? Like, yeah, I think that might be the definition of an addict right there. But anyway, he didn't tell me that. He didn't laugh at me. He didn't judge me. He didn't anything. And, of course, the excuses start to come out of why I can't possibly be an addict. And he said something to me that was the single most important thing I'd ever heard in my life. And still to this day, for me, it is the single most sentence. The single most important sentence. Single most sentence, that don't make sense. And he said to me, Anne, an addict is not defined by how much or how often they use. An addict is defined by using against their will. Sounds to me, sweetheart, like you're using against your will. And you know why that was the most important thing right there? Because this happened. My arms went up. Not literally, I was holding the phone, obviously. But I surrendered right there. Because I had no choice. I had no argument. I had no argument to that. There was nothing I could say. That floored me. Boom. And I was with that. I just turned around and said to him, what do I do? And he said, I'm going to pass your number over. He goes, and I'm going to get some meetings. He goes, just hang up the phone, and he goes, and I'll get someone to call you right back. I promise. And I was crying, and he's going, I'm going to call you right back. I swear to God. And you know what he did? And in the meantime, I got to call my mum, and I said to my mum, like, you know, I said, Mum, I've done it again. And it was that, it wasn't even anger. She weren't giving me a lecture. She weren't having a go at me. It was just that pain. That despair, why? And I was like, Mum, it's different this time. I swear to God, it's different. I said, because I'm getting help, I'm gonna do something about it. Mum, I'm not asking you to come around and rescue me and look after the kids. Well, technically I am, because I need you to look at the kids, because I'm gonna go to a meeting this evening. I'm gonna go get help. And I don't know how I said it with so much certainty, but I did. And I remember that evening, my mum come over and I'd been crying all day. I was a mess. I was excited. I was nervous. This, that, and the other. And I remember this woman, she comes up and she pulled up and she phoned me and she's like, I'm outside. And I remember walking and I was like shaking. And I don't remember much of the journey, but I remember this. I live in Norfolk, which is West London, and she was meeting another newcomer all the way in Hackney. Now, if this ain't God in the mix, I have no fucking idea what it is, yeah? Because my natural default setting is lazy. Just bear this in mind. So we're in the car, and we're chatting away, and, you know, and we're talking. She's telling me all about the program and the meetings and what to expect and da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, yep, great. She's like, we talk about God. I'm like, yep, no, great. I don't have a problem with God. I don't think he likes me very much, but, you know, other than that, we're good. You know, I'm like, I have no problem with God. Everything's going to be fine, this, that, and the other. And then she goes, yeah, we abstain from all mind-altering substances. And I'm like, Well, I'll never be able to do MDMA again. Ooh, and I do quite like a balloon, you know. Or don't know, but okay, yeah, all right, you know, I didn't do them that often, fuck it, we'll be fine. And she goes, and that includes alcohol. What do you mean? Sorry, what, huh, And so, run that one by me again, and she goes, yes, and that means alcohol as well. And I was like, fuck off, you know. I was like, no way. And I thought, this bitch is crazy. She's fucking nuts. What do you mean? Like, no way. And I looked at her and I swear to God, these are my exact words. I looked at her and I said, so when you say like, never, do you mean never, ever, amen, never? Or never, ever, just not for now, never. Please be never, ever, not for now. Please be never, ever, not for now. And she said, never, ever. Amen, never. And I swear to God, I'd have got out of that car, but God knew what he was doing, right? I had no idea how far away from home I was. I didn't know the area. I'm almost in, like, anywhere between Norfolk and Hackney. I have no fucking idea where I was. I didn't have an Oyster. And even if I did have, guess what? I'm too fucking lazy. This bitch was going to drop me home, so fuck it. I'm going to stay with this crazy lunatic because I'm going to get a lift home. You know what I mean? And I'm so glad I did, because when I walked into that meeting, we were a bit late. I didn't have to get, like, you know, do the introduction of who I am or anything like that, but it was okay. And I ended up sitting by myself because there wasn't enough seats. And I remember there was this woman at the front and she kept looking around at me, and I'm sitting there going, oh my God, does she fancy me or something? Like, what the fuck, you know? I'm like, you know, this, that, and the other. But I would just, and I can't remember all of it, but I remember when the speaker was talking, she was talking and her life was different to mine, and I'm going, see, I can't be. But then I remember when she spoke and she said about, like, alcohol, and she was saying that she didn't believe she was an alcoholic because she didn't drink every single day. And I was like, I got that. See, I don't really belong here with you lot. Do you know what I mean? And then she turned around and she said, but the thing is I would white knuckle. I would drink, say, every other day to prove that I wasn't an alcoholic. Do you see what I mean? And I was like, ooh. I can kind of relate to this shit. And that's the days when I manage. And 9 times out of 10, if I did not drink every day, it's probably because I fucking give myself alcohol poisoning the night before and I felt too physically sick to, or something like that. You know what I mean? But otherwise, yeah, I got it. But the most important thing was that there were people there and they loved me and they hugged me, you know, and they told me to keep coming back. And I remember because I came in on the 16th of May 2015. And it was my birthday on the 31st of May. And I'm sitting there, and at the end of the meeting, it's dawned on me that I'm never going to be able to drink or use again. And I'm like, fuck, it's my birthday in 2 weeks, guys. I don't think I can do this. I'm sorry, but I think we need to cancel this. Can I come back later? You know what I mean? And this guy was like, Anne, don't worry about it. Just worry about today. And I still didn't really get it, but I had to. See, I had what was being spoken about, and so many of you have heard about that gift of desperation. I didn't want to give up drinking. I only wanted to give up drugs, but I was so desperate, I had to give it a try. I wanted to go out for my birthday and celebrate in the only fucking way I know how, but I had to give this a try because of where I was mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. If the drink and drugs did not get me, then I fucking would have. I'd have very easily taken my own fucking life. I weren't scared of death. In actual fact, suicide has been a constant thought of mine since I was a kid. Do you know what I mean? I'd spent so many times in my life trying to work out what the fuck is wrong with me. Why am I the way I am? you know, and I can do the blame game and I can turn and say it's because I was, you know, I was abused as a child. That's what it was. Or maybe it was because that guy who broke my heart. You know, you'll kind of see a lot of my tragedies are kind of male-related. I do apologise, gentlemen. I don't hate you. It's just I seem to have three addictions, drink, drugs, dick. So a lot of my troubles kind of like tie in there. So, so do apologise. Like if anyone's sort of like, well, that's a bit much, do apologise. Slightly extra. My daughter's here as well. I don't know what I'm saying. You know when you're just thinking, what the fuck are you doing? All I can say is thank fuck my mum said she couldn't make it this weekend, didn't it? Oh, she knew, she knew. I got pregnant at 14. My mum already knew, don't worry. sorry, I've just completely thrown myself. But the thing is the more I looked for reasons, I searched for reasons and all I found was excuses. You see, I spent a lot of my life doing that. If you hadn't have, then I wouldn't have. See, because I made it about everyone else. It was always everyone else's fault and I'm nothing more than a victim. I like that role. I play it very well. Do you know what I mean? Although I may stand here and be like, at one minute I'm this strong, confident, fucking Amazonian woman. Do you know what I mean? Next thing I'm like, you know, oh, but they hurt me, you know. It depends, because I'm very good at switching roles in my life. Anyway, when I came in, my life changed, and I had no idea how much my life had changed. And I was told, as everyone else in this room, I'm sure, has been told, that you need to get a sponsor. Keep going to as many meetings as you can. However many meetings that is, you do them, you know. You've still got to live life. You've still got to do the things. We're not saying anyone like, give up your job and like, you know, just make this. It won't make it your life all about this. That won't work. You know, you still got to live. But do the meetings that you can. Get yourself a sponsor and go through the work. And then the most beautiful part about going through the work is you get to pass it on. And that's where the real magic is for me personally. Obviously, the whole process of the steps and looking at myself and being able to identify myself as a woman, as a mother, as a human, and being able to understand, like, you know, that I am at fault and see those defects of character. I honestly believe that when I did my step 7 prayer, it was going to be like a bibbidi bobbidi boop moment. You know what I mean? I was going to, like, you know, once I got to the amen, I was going to be perfect, you know, because all these defects of characters, they were going to go, they were just going to go. You know, I was going to practically float to fucking Tesco's, you know? I thought, yeah. And when I was still, like, impatient and I'm still, like, you know, blaming other people and I'm still, like, you know, I'm sitting there going, like, oh, I think this didn't work. Maybe I should do it again. Maybe I didn't, like, you know, do it in the right setting. Maybe we should have lit candles. I don't know what went wrong, you know. Because, again, we get to continue. We get to do this stuff on a daily basis. You know, and so if you're anything like me in the beginning, that sounded like hell, because I'm not very good at continuing. I'm not very good at maintaining. I'm very good at starting shit, getting all excited, buying everything that goes with it, and then giving up very fucking quickly. You know what I mean? But you know what? This stuff isn't hard. It really isn't. It's not very difficult. It's just difficult to, like, you know, get your head into it to begin with, because your brain, your brain is going to try and tell you and talk you out of it. But it's okay, because that's the ill part of your brain. Since being in recovery, I finally get to be the woman I think I was always meant to be. I spent my whole life searching. I spent my whole life looking for running. But what? I don't know what for. And I never found my answer. I found temporary relief, you know? But none of it was real. None of it was really sustainable. This is the only thing that I have found that works. When it was mentioned by Pat about, like, judging yourself and your intentions, I'm like, oh my God, yeah. But you see, the problem is I always wanted to be a good mum and I wasn't. That's the truth. I always wanted to be a good person and I wasn't. And that's the truth. So I wanted to be able to take care of my kids and this, that, and the other. And the truth of the matter is I wasn't a good mum. I really wasn't. And my poor children had to suffer with me. You know, that wasn't what I intended to do, not at all. But the more I did that and the worse and shit I felt about myself, the more I continued. You know all about the misery go round. You wouldn't be in this room if you didn't ride it for how many years. And here I was able to look at all of that stuff, not just at my resentments at other people, but also my conduct. Like with sex, yeah, for example, I was able to look at not only how I treated people, but how I allowed people to treat me and why. Why is it okay for me to allow a man to make me feel the way he did? Why is it okay for me to allow myself to be used and abused? And I realized because I was so fucking lonely. And all I wanted was for you to fix me. Whether you were, you know, a lover, whether you were my friends, whether you were my parent, whether you were my child, yeah. I wanted my kids to fix me. And that's where my frustration was, because you couldn't fix me. I got angry at you. I blamed you for me being fucking broken because I did not know what was wrong with me. And you guys told me what was wrong with me. It's in this book. The very definition of what the fuck is wrong with me. This book that was written long before my daddy was even a twinkle in his daddy's eye, you know, speaks to me. And through it, I get to recover. And the most beautiful thing is my family get to recover also. And through our families recovering, our wider communities get to recover. Now, like I said in the beginning, you don't get to your 12th step, get a certificate, and off you fuck off out the door just to go live your life joyous, happy, and free doing what you're doing all by yourself. Mm-mm. We stick around. You see, because our brothers and sisters are still dying out there. And I say our brothers and sisters, because the beautiful thing about being part of this fellowship, and I emphasize the word part of, because we are all we're all joined together, because fuck am I trying the other one? We're all joined together through this. We're all part of one another's journeys and one another's stories. This is bigger than any of one of us individually. So you are all my brothers and sisters. I can go anywhere in the world and walk into a CA meeting and know that I am at home. I know that I am amongst family. I even done it. I went away to Amsterdam and I found a meeting, and in I walked and there was these people there. That's it, yeah. You know, and they were my brothers, you know, and they welcomed me in, because that's what we do. We don't kick our wounded. We don't shoot our wounded. We will not tear you down. We're not here to tear you down, to judge you, to destroy you, or anything like that. Mm-mm, we are here to help you. You know why? Because it helps us also. Now, you don't realize this. When you're doing what you're doing and you're walking amongst your community, when you were walking down the road and you were being the beautiful people that you are, you're carrying a message. When you're being kind and loving to your fellows, not just inside the room, but our humans out there who don't even know about this stuff, and you're just being your beautiful selves, you're carrying and you're spreading the love. You are carrying a message. That person, and I have no idea who that person is. I will never know. You never know. Maybe one day someone might show up and go, what surgery was it? Was it Rice Lip Road? Oh, that was me. I don't know. But until that day happens, I will never be able to thank the person who saved my life through putting up a poster. That simple act. That simple act of putting up that poster in my doctor's surgery saved my life. And I don't know who else's lives. How simple is that? But that one simple act was full of love. It was full of kindness, and it was full of passion for a fellowship which they clearly believed in, because this fellowship clearly must have saved their lives too. So when we think of PI, now I don't know whether your meetings have it, but we, in my meetings, my home groups, we have a PI person, and they'll announce, you know, and they'll hold up the poster. And they will say, like, you know, like, that for public information. And we go around and we put these posters up in doctors, surgeries, dentists, or any places where you think an addict may find them. For example, you know, the holding room when you get caught shoplifting in Tesco's. I think that's a good place. You know what I mean? Anywhere. Let's go into pubs. Let's go in and talk to these people. Let's go in and turn around and say, like, you know, hi, my name's Anne and I'm a member of CA. And I'd like to ask you if you could take the time to, like, you know, either if you've got the time and I can talk to you now, or if and you can just put this poster up in your toilet. Here, take somewhere to find, take some leaflets. When you're walking past somebody and they look like they're having a bit of a rough time, or a homeless person and this, that and the other, there's cards you can have. And you can just give them a card. You don't necessarily have to sit down on the floor if you ain't got that time. Sometimes we don't have that time. And you can't go around and absolutely 12-step everyone you meet in life. You know what I mean? You can't do it. But hey, here, have a card. Come along to this place. And if you've got a phone, call that number. Yeah? And they'll tell you where to come. And if anything, you'll get a cup of tea and some biscuits. You know? Come along to my home group. Get a slice of cake too. Ooh, just saying. You know? The reality is like, you know, going in and sending out letters as well. You know, you don't have to. If you can't go on foot, you can email. You can go onto the website and you can download the logo and this, that, and the other, and you can send an email out to all these people, and you can, like, do an email version of the poster. You can write a letter and put it in an A4 size envelope with the poster and say, like, you know, like, I'm not going to do the whole letter, but, like, you know, basically, like, you know, look, I'm from PI, from Cocaine Anonymous, explain what Cocaine Anonymous is, and say, would you please put up our poster? Because these posters save lives. They work. We know they work. You know what I mean? How many of us are in this room right now? And just a quick show of hands, how many people came in via a poster? Okay. This was a rubbish exercise, wasn't it? It's three of us. Oh, there you go. Four. No, that's four people whose lives were saved through a poster. But the phone lines as well. Those phone lines need manning. Being a 12-step responder, that woman saved my life. Because if I'd have been told, like I said, I'm lazy. If I'd have been told, here's the meeting, off you go, I probably wouldn't have made it. I'd have got too scared and I'd have bolted out. But this woman showed up and put me in her car and took me there. She didn't ask for petrol money. She didn't ask for anything in return. You know? It says how our new job, you know, is given to us by our Creator. And again, God is who you decide. Me, personally, God is love. Because God, that love is a power that cannot be described. It cannot be intellectualized, but it's very real. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, there's so many different types of love. At the end of the day, but love is love. And an act of kindness is an act of love. And that person who put their poster up, at the end of the day, they that was love. And they probably didn't even know it. They probably took on the commitment and thought, oh, fuck, I've got to go put up some posters. Do you know what I mean? And thought, oh, let me just go do that quickly. Maybe who knows what was going through their head. I don't know. But I got sent this today. Oh, I'm going to try and find it. My sponsor sent me this. It is our duty to love the unloved, help the helpless, and bring hope to the hopeless. Kindness makes you the most beautiful person in the world, no matter what you look like. Unexpected kindness is the most powerful, least costly, and most underrated agent of human change. Wherever you are, be there with love. Be there with compassion, kindness, and gratitude. Smile and show you care. How beautiful is that? At the end of the day, it is our duty now to carry on the message to those who still suffer. Well, the thing is those who walk through the doors and off their own back, great. But what about those who don't know where we are? What about those who have no idea that we exist? There are doctors who I've spoken to who have gone, cocaine what? They have no idea. People don't know about Cocaine Anonymous still. So when they've got somebody who is displaying the signs of addiction of alcoholism, they don't know where to send them. That's terrible. Even if you just take one poster and go put it up in a place where you think there needs a poster to be, that in itself is going to save a life. And that in itself is powerful. That in itself is amazing. And especially, like, you know, those who haven't gone through the 12 steps yet, I ain't saying it's not a race, you ain't got to do it in a day. Do it in your own time, have your own experience, but do it. I may have came into Cocaine Anonymous for myself, but I stay for others. You have to go through the steps because you have to carry on the message. You have to spread the love. I know in our book it says we don't say must and we don't say have, and it's only a suggestion. You know what? You want to stick around, baby. It ain't a suggestion. You have to. And I speak to the women here because I know you're going to look around, and we're always outnumbered. And I'm not saying it's a competition. We're not in war with anyone. But there are not enough women in this fellowship. So therefore, women struggle to find sponsors. So who are we to turn around and say that I'm not going to help my sister? It is so much, I'm not saying it's any more important, but in a way it kind of is, because at the end of the day, we need you. We need you to do your steps. We need you to go through the work so that you can then help another sister who's waiting. I've walked into rooms where there's like one woman. I've walked into rooms where there's none, because she showed up and thought, oh, I can't identify and I can't relate, and she didn't come back. So if you're sat there and you haven't gone for your steps yet, you need to. Honestly, you need to. And whether you take a service position in PI or H&I or this, that, and the other, it's bigger than us. It's bigger than our local meeting. It really is. It really, really is. There are so many service positions in CA that are crying out for us. Let's get out of our comfort zones. Let's get out of ourselves. And let's go trudge the road of happy destiny together. Some people had to organise this place. You know, we get to show up and have a great weekend. And we've got the lanyards that have been printed, the chairs have been put out, the lighting, the videos that have been made, the graphics, everything. Everything has been organised for us. It didn't just magically appear. These were people who did this and they raised their hands. And it starts from who would like a service commitment. Put that hand up. Whether you were greeting, making the tea, whether you were putting out the chairs, putting the chairs away, whether you're the scroll keeper, whether you're the cigarette butt picker-upper. And then when it comes to that, and you just keep putting your hands up and keep moving on and keep moving up and keep moving forward, because spiritual growth is not about standing fucking still. Excuse my language. But it ain't. Spiritual growth is about continue. You have to continue. You cannot just stay put. You can't just turn around and go, oh, well, I'm good, thanks. I'm here. I'm all right now. Thank you very much. I got me my recovery. Here's my fucking certificate. And off I fucking bob. Mm-mm. That is not what we do, people. And that is not how we stay sober. We need to keep the doors open. We need to keep the doors open. Because our brothers and sisters need to find us. And it's down to us to show them the way. And I just want to finish on this. I spoke about my children. I have 5 girls. One of which is my unofficially adopted daughter. And she's also in this room with me. Once upon a time, I couldn't barely look after my own kids. And here I have a young woman who lives with me. And through living with me, and I'm not saying this out of my own ego, because I ain't running around bashing anyone over the head with a book. I may sound like I do, but I don't. She's decided to take the step and change her life and join Refit CO. My eldest girl, who was the one who probably suffered the most of my frustration and disappointment of being a shit human being, and I bullied that girl. I bullied her when she was a child. I really did. I really did. She got fucking beat. She got sworn at. She got insulted. I had the privilege of bringing her to a meeting with me, not because she's one of us, but because she came along and I wanted to share with her the experience of CA. I just wanted her to know what it is that we do in here, just to give her a deeper understanding. And at the end of the meeting, she turned and she said, is it all right if I say something? And I said, yeah. And she said, hi, my name is Bethany, and I'm Anne's daughter. And I want to thank you all. I want to thank you for being part of my mum's journey. I want to thank you for being part of my mum's recovery and helping her to recover. I want to thank you for giving my sisters the mum that they always deserved. And I want to thank you for giving me back my mum. And I want to thank each and every single one of you for being part of my journey, for helping me to continue in my recovery. Let's keep them doors open, people. Thank you.